Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me,
Gary LeMaster.
Gary is one of our most diligent researchers, and his outline of what we're going to be discussing today is only 12 pages long. So thank you, Gary.
It's shorter than usual.
Yeah, a little bit shorter than usual. We're going to be talking about, and Gary's going to present a program on based on his research about what's happening in the Arizona legislature. But I think first we should talk for a minute about what's happening at the federal level. Federal level, the Republicans in Congress went behind the president's back and invited a leader of a foreign country to address them directly. They didn't tell the president. They didn't tell the administration. They didn't tell the State Department they were doing it. They brought this individual in, who's the prime minister of Israel, to address a joint session aimed at undercutting negotiations with Iran on their nuclear capabilities. And they later sent a letter directly to the Iranian leadership telling them basically that if they signed something with the president of the United States, if the Republicans got in power, they would undo it.
We apparently won another war. We've been at war all but 17 years of our history of the United States. And so we apparently just can't wait to get into the next one.
Clearly, the thing, folks, if you study it, is if you don't get a deal, then we're headed for a war with Iran. I mean, there are the people in the Washington Post advocating starting a war with Iran. That'll be a great solution to everything. The same sort of individual advocated getting into Iraq in the first place, right, and Afghanistan and all the rest. We've never seen anyone undercut the American government in the way the Republicans have. And I know that they're fearful that the negotiations won't produce what they want, and they won't. Negotiations produce something that neither side wants. That's why they're negotiations. They're based on compromises. That whatever happens, whatever comes out of the Iranian negotiations, is not going to be perfect. It's not going to solve all the problems. So the level of sort of sedition that the Republicans are willing to do. We've never seen that before. And I know that, you know, the people are calling it treason, all this, but it's, legally, of course, it's not, but it's a level of escalation of domestic policy that we've never seen in foreign policy in decades, even with being lied to get us into the Iraq war.
They're trying to draw an equivalency with Nancy Pelosi's visit to Syria to meet with Assad. It's not even remotely the same thing because she went through the State Department and she was accompanied by State Department officials. She met with the White House before she left to talk about the discussions, and she was accompanied by people from the other party. So it's nowhere near the same level of sedition. I can't think of another term.
It's not. I mean, that was coordinated. To try to pretend that it was equivalent is amazing. So, Gary, let's turn to the Arizona legislature.
We have to.
My gosh. I mean, we keep thinking it's bad. You know, we think on the national level, Republicans are getting more and more extreme and crazy. And then we turn to Arizona. So where do you want to start? Do you want to start on education or?
Well, the one thing I'd like to start by saying, the one thing that the legislature has in common with Congress is, well, aside from being now controlled by the Republican Party, is that you can see following the November elections that the payback to the dark money interest has taken, you know, center stage.
Give me an example, Gary.
Well, on the federal level, the very first, you know, bill or one of the first bills to be introduced, aside from another repeal Obamacare bill, was a payback to the Koch brothers to approve the to force the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline, which I like to refer to as the Trans Canada pipeline. People forget this is a foreign company that's trying to find a way to more easily market its product, its oil. And so they want us, you know, they want the United States to take all the risk. It will result ultimately in approximately 50 jobs. So all this big, you know, job creation nonsense is just that. It is nonsense. It's 50 permanent jobs.
I think a long time ago the Republicans came up with a strategy whether it's in trying to improve the environment that's always a job killer. They claim that Obamacare was a job killer. They always claim pretty much everything is a job killer. And people are not really in a position to analyze these things. So when Gary looks at it, and so they'll create a lot of temporary jobs, right?
Right.
But when you get to permanency, it's almost nothing.
Several thousand temporary jobs.
It's 1/10 of 1/2 of 1/4 of 2/3 of 1% of American a job market. It's nothing. One way the jobs part of it, except for the individuals who, you know, would really like a job given the economy, it won't impact unemployment whatsoever.
No, and it's one of the really unspoken problems with and environmental issues with it is the byproduct of refining tar sands oil. Which, first of all, tar sands oil, we don't yet know how to clean up a spill. We've had two spills in the U.S.
No.
And all they've been able to do is let it sink to the bottom of the rivers. And the byproduct of refining it is a product called pet coke, which is a very fine, black powder that, has some of the properties of coke, which can be burned. So the people refining it, which, you know, the Koch brothers company, have not wanted to find a way of disposing of it. So they just put it in huge piles. There's a refinery in Chicago that has enormous piles of the stuff. And there's one near Detroit. It's so fine when any little breeze picks up, it is taken into the air. It's not confined, it's not covered, and it's causing health problems in the communities where it blows.
This is the problem with a lot of industries is they externalize their costs on the American public so that they create pollution, sometimes extremely dangerous pollution. And then the taxpayers have to pick up the bill to clean it up. Let's turn to Arizona, though. Gary, okay. Where do you want to start? We've got enough crazy bills to fill 5.5 hours of speed talking.
Yeah, well, let's start with the budget that was pushed through in an all-night session. It's largely Governor Ducey's budget. And if you remember right during the campaign, he was constantly, he and his dark money interests were constantly attacking Fred DeVal for raising tuition in the colleges when he was president of the Board of Regents. Which
they were forced to do because the state cut the money
right,
to higher education.
Republicans
right?
cut the money for.
And it wasn't exactly Fred DeVal doing it. It was the entire Board of
They were forced to because they had no other choice. Either, you know, the state had cut so much from its support of the universities.
And you say in your notes, because I'll read off, this is a pretty exact figure, the cuts to universities are $99 million, 13% cut.
Yes. And this is offset, of course, by giving corporations yet another. I think it's if memory serves, it's 24 out of 25 years that of the last 25 years that Republican legislatures has given corporate tax cuts.
So they're taking $99 million from the colleges and universities, and they're giving tax cuts of $100 million. That's their idea of balancing.
So they've transferred money out of the universities, and so they're
into private hands.
They're balancing, so-called balancing the budget on the backs of students. So there's going to be, you know, little choice for the Board of Regents to raise tuition, if not this year and in ensuing years.
All right, Gary, tell us a little bit about what seems the positive aspect of the budget. They added $74 million of new money to the K-12 classroom.
Yeah, but then they took $166 million from non-classroom funding. And this gets portrayed as administrative costs. You know, you're given the impression that it's in salaries for the principals and the superintendents, and it's money being squandered outside the classroom. When in fact, it's all, you know, managerial costs such as, maintenance and transportation. If you have any doubts, go talk to one of the local superintendents, which I have not long ago. Camp Verde has major transportation, problems because of its budget. Both Mingus, all of the school districts are struggling.
What they told us in an interview, Gary, was that they had cut, you know, all the fat they could, and now they're cutting the important stuff. And the donations they get from folks at tax time hardly make up for what's happening to them.
It's, you know, the so-called administrative costs are things like transportation, heating and cooling, school counseling, nurses, you know, things that you expect a school to offer. Just to keep, you know, keep kids moving on the right path.
We've done a lot of programs about Yavapai College and trying to save the campus here in Sedona. How much money is the legislature giving to, for example, Yavapai College and other community colleges?
Yavapai College gets 1% of their budget from, I don't know the dollar figure amount, but it gets 1% of its budget from the state. That's almost certain to go away. Pima and Maricopa counties, this new budget just cut all of the funding to the community colleges.
Yeah. And so I think one of the things, and the president has talked about it, that will really help people move ahead and get a career going of some kind, it, our community college. That's where so many people start. They're the give everyone who didn't do well in high school or did well in high school and doesn't have a lot of money a second chance.
Right.
They're very valuable.
They can work part-time.
State is providing 1% of the money to fund our local community college.
And just to put this in perspective, you know, when we're talking about the funding for universities and community colleges, I looked up the national average, and the latest figures are 2012. The national average for per student across the country is $10,660 per student for universities in state funding. And in Arizona, that number in 2012 was $4,000.
And that's 2012. I mean, this is 2015, and the economy has recovered quite a bit, and you'd think they would, those figures would be even higher.
And we just cut, you know, a big chunk of, $99 million from the budget. So it's going to have a huge impact. It's going to cause the students to pay more in tuition. There was a figure I read not long ago that 70% of the jobs in Arizona require some post-secondary education, you know, future jobs. So, we're demanding that our students you know, get some post-secondary education, either from technical schools, community colleges, or universities. On one hand,
but it's a huge private industry here in Arizona, isn't it? With a very, very strong lobby, all these for-profit colleges providing sometimes a very iffy education in things. And I know that I have a friend who looked into it, and you know, it's $25,000 a year in tuition for this program, culinary program. And she looked at the salaries that you got, which the school refused to tell her. The school refused, the for-profit school refused to tell her what say, pastry chefs made when they got out. But when she found out, I mean, it would take, one thing if you're 20 years old and you have a long career ahead of you and you work your way up to a really good kitchen and stuff, but, astonishingly uneconomic education. But that's the way so much is done in Arizona. Somebody's going to make some money on it. And then I think you in your outline, didn't you talk about more money going to charter schools and private schools? Aren't they draining public education for that?
There's STO, student tuition. I forget what the O stands for, but it's, they're so-called scholarships. So, the idea is to be able to choose the school that you send your children to. And the whole idea is all under the notion of choice. Well, the vast majority of Arizona students, well, students across the country, go to public schools. And the charter schools, I've talked about that before on the show, that the charter, there's been studies done comparing charter schools and public schools, you know, traditional public schools. And there's no difference. There's no greater level of performance.
And they're cherry picking the students a lot of times. They can go to the students who are best and let them in. So there's a bill called, let me read it off the sheet of paper that Gary's given me, called HB 2246, that would permit parents to opt out of testing. Now, the reason you have these tests and the reason they help the kids is, and I'm not a big fan of testing, is that you can actually tell objectively what somebody's learned in certain areas. And I think if you do over-testing, I mean, I think you get a very distorted picture, and I'm not a big fan of it. But the problem is you have schools from, tens of thousands of schools all over the country, and you can look at the grades, and you can't really know what the kids have learned. And so testing provides a second avenue, an insight into what's happening. Now, if it's misused, if it's used to teach to the test, then it is a big negative.
Right. This has got to be, you know, kind of a go along. It goes along with the anti-Common Core mentality. Is Common Core. For those of you not familiar with it, Common Core is simply a set of standards that were established by governors and educators across the country. It's not something that was foisted off on the states by the federal government. It's something that the states themselves requested and created.
And the state created, essentially, and the federal government assigned. Federal government said, oh, this looks like a good idea. We support it.
Right. And so that's what has got a lot of people upset, is that it's been endorsed by the federal government. But what it really comes down to is, you know, we have a very mobile population that moves from state to state to state, and, you know, along with their children. And so it creates standards. So if I have children in Arizona and I in schools in Arizona, and I move to, let's say, Wisconsin, I can be fairly certain under Common Core that my students are going to be covering the same material in Wisconsin that they were in Arizona. So they're not going to be left behind, you know, suddenly be, you know, thrust into a new school and be way behind the others or way ahead and bored.
People don't seem to want to know the facts about Common Core. They want to use it as an anti-federal thing. We've talked about this before, but I've lived, and I haven't moved that much, I've lived in four different states. I'm from Oklahoma. I lived in California, New York, and Arizona. And when I live in those states, of course, I'm a citizen of those states, in a sense. But basically, I'm a citizen of the United States of America. If I move to Guam, or if I move to New Zealand, I'm still a citizen of this, of the United States. That's where our citizenship is, not to a particular state, which most people change. I mean, there are people from my hometown. A friend of mine went back to do a reunion, high school reunion. Almost nobody's there. Everybody in our little high school in Oklahoma has moved on. Most of them are out of state. People move all the time. And so I think our primary allegiance has to be to the United States. I like Arizona, but if I move from Arizona, I'm no longer an Arizonan. I'm something else. I'm a Idahoian or what.
It's the difference between the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution. Under the Articles of Confederation, which a lot of people confuse with the Constitution, that's where the states' rights really came about, was that each state was in essence an individual nation. That didn't work. After the revolution, we had a large federal debt because of the cost of fighting a war, and there was no way of paying it because some states didn't want to contribute to it, to the cost.
A lot of conservatives, yeah, and I've even seen them quote the Article of Confederation as if they're the Constitution. I mean, come on, guys. Do a little more research than that. The Articles of Confederation were extraordinarily dangerous to the United States because they provided no basis to defend the country, no basis to really have a commerce between the states. And so it was replaced by the Constitution. And I think the Constitution has its flaws, of course, like everything that human beings do. But it was a real step forward. The people who are arguing, like the attacks on the federal government that Gary's going to tell you about, had traditionally been people like Calhoun and stuff during the American Civil War. And they wanted to have slavery. And so states' rights, where I come from, is all about discrimination against African American folks. I think George Wallace said, and some of you or folks are old enough remember George Wallace. He said, "Well, if I'm in favor of segregation and discrimination, nobody's going to support it. But if I talk about states' rights, I mean, he switched the discussion from what was really going on the ground, people, where people were really getting hurt and systematically discriminated against and damaged by the system." This cruel system of segregation. And he turned it into a states' rights issue. So what Gary, is our legislature, which I presume has learned absolutely nothing from being Americans all these years.
You would think that we are no longer a state in the United States, every year seems to be in recent years, kind of, ironically or coincidentally, since we have an African American president, we've seen a raft of nullification and secession bills, or what I call secession light. We have things like
sedition light, Gary.
Well, it's both.
I'm kidding, but
but some of these things are, it's like denying that we're part of the United States, and we might as well take down the American flag and replace it with the Arizona flag,
which is against the Arizona Constitution. Incidentally, right. Folks, there's an article in the Arizona Constitution saying that they will obey and to follow all the federal laws of the United States of America.
So there's a bill that's HCR 2003, has passed the House and is on the way to the Senate, and this is from a couple of days ago, so I don't know what's transpired today or on Friday, but it would place on the 2016 ballot a proposal to impose fiscal restraints on the federal government. So the state is going to tell the federal government how to manage its money, And it would limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, which is, you know, unconstitutional. And it would limit the terms of office.
You don't think that's sedition, though. I mean, it's secession.
It's secession.
What the southern
states
wanted to do.
You know, the South will rise again, and Arizona is part of that, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is winding its way through the legislature.
And the legislature would set term limits for officials and members of Congress, what's the next one, Gary?
It's totally unconstitutional.
Of course.
Next one is HB 2326. It uses a little different strategy to get a state called constitutional convention, in that it would have Arizona join a compact of states that have already voted to require a federal balanced budget. So this is a patently unconstitutional as well. What they want to do is get all the states that have balanced budget amendments that have passed and form a compact that would bully the federal government into a balanced budget amendment of its own.
And balancing the budget sounds really good to very, very many people. It's a very, very bad idea, particularly on the national level.
It's a fraud.
It's a fraud. And it's also, it would give the government no way to deal with recessions by increasing spending. It would cripple our ability to act in foreign affairs. Suppose that you wanted to buy a house, but you couldn't borrow any money. If you had the cash to pay for the house, then it's yours. Otherwise, it's not yours. You'll never get there. And it's that kind of it's much more complex than that, but it's that kind of a crazy limitation that sounds good.
And if you want a balanced budget, keep electing Democrats, because the last balanced budgets in Congress or in the United States for the federal government were under Clinton. Bush never had a balanced budget in 8 years. Reagan never had a balanced budget. It goes, you know, Bush 1 never had a balanced budget. We've had very few balanced budgets in the history of the United States. We started out with the national debt as a result of the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, I forget the percentage of years the United States has had debt, but when you do things, you end up with debt. The debt is wasted. I mean, the war in Iraq. Think of the billions and billions and billions of dollars and thousands of lives wasted there. But that's bad policy. That's from electing bad people to run the country. I don't think George Bush was a bad person. But I think that he was in the wrong job.
Let's be clear. The balanced budget idea is it would limit what the government could do in pursuing a war, for example. We would likely still be suffering from the Great Depression if we'd had a balanced budget amendment. We would definitely be still suffering from the Great Recession.
Yes, it's only the stimulus program that helped boost us out. And the problem with the stimulus program, folks, was not that it was too big. You know, I think almost all the money is pretty much paid back by the increase in the economy. The problem was it wasn't big enough to really give you and, you know, we saw the economists, many of the economists like Paul Krugman, could show you how much money you needed to spend to really jumpstart the economy. And I don't remember, we put in about a third or a fourth of what we needed to. It seemed like a lot of money, but we would have been out of that thing quicker.
This whole idea of a balanced budget amendment is basically a Republican idea to kill the federal government. It's just a way of if you can force a balanced budget and you can keep cutting taxes, then you have no choice but to cut, you know, institutions and services. So you'll eventually get to the point where Grover Norquist wanted to have shrink the federal government to such a state that he could drown it in a bathtub.
This will harm individuals terribly. It will harm anybody in any kind of trouble who doesn't have a lot of money. It will shift power to the very, very wealthy, which is already taking place. I want to change subjects, not really, Gary, but I want to go down to SB 1384, which would prohibit the federal any federal official from arresting anyone in Arizona unless they had permission from the county sheriff. Tell me about this.
It's posse comitatus brought to the legislature is that, you know, posse comitatus believes that the only real authority in the United States are county sheriffs. And this would take the power away from the federal government because, you know, we know that they're coming to take your guns away. And it would take the power away from the federal government and give it to the local sheriffs, just like posse comitatus.
Totally unconstitutional from day one.
Absolutely against the 14th Amendment.
Let's go to your next one, Garrett. Yeah, go ahead. But
we have another one that I should go back to. There's another version of this whole compact, and that's related to guns, and it's been that's been introduced by Bob Thorpe, our own
whack job,
from Flagstaff, who represents LD6.
The guy's who's so extreme, he redefines the definition of an extreme Tea Party legislator.
And he claims to be a constitutional authority, a constitutional scholar.
But we've read his book, and it ain't happening, guys.
And I've read his bills, and he keeps putting forward bills that are patently unconstitutional, which
has a very thin resume and a very murky past, as near as we can tell.
This one is HB 2368. This is the Obama derangement syndrome bill, which would declare henceforth that the sovereign state of Arizona will not enforce any executive orders issued by the President of the United States or any policy directives from the Department of Justice unless they are affirmed by Congress and signed into law. You know, it's patently unconstitutional. The tail wagging the dog.
All right. I want to take up another one of your ones here, SB 1330, another nullification bill. It declares that all federal laws that violate the Second Amendment freedoms are invalid in Arizona and that agencies may not help enforcement. Well, that Second Amendment and all the amendments, for better or worse, are interpreted not by the Arizona legislature, folks. The legislature doesn't get to decide what's constitutional and what's not. We have a court system that does that, including the Supreme Court established by our Constitution to decide exactly these kind of issues.
It's even true of our state constitution. When there's a question of constitutionality, it has to go before the courts. The legislature can't decide that, and on the federal level, Congress can't decide that.
And they want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which has brought health care and good benefits, honestly described benefits. People say, well, it's more expensive, but it hasn't been. But you actually know what you're getting. And when I was working that, we got a constant stream of emails with these $65 a month, you know, for complete health care, only to find out that there's a limitation on how much can be spent a year. There's a limitation on how much can be spent on a lifetime. There's a huge deductible. There's all these ifs, ands, and buts. And they want to get rid of affordable health care. I wanted to talk about, can we talk about the attacks on the poor?
I just wanted to finish up on the affordable health care. Bob Thorpe, our wonderful representative, has sponsored a bill that would take away subsidies for Obamacare in the state of Arizona. And
Arizona doesn't have its own system. It uses the federal system. And this law, it's not only unconstitutional, it's preposterously stupid, would cut people's subsidies. Bob Thorpe wants to raise the amount of money that you have to pay for your medical insurance. He wants to take away your subsidy if you're getting care. Just, I think, because he hates the federal government so much that there just seems to be very little limit on the kind of bills that he will introduce. I did want to turn to what's happening with stuff with the poor.
We have a whole bunch. I've got two pages of bills that are going through that are all attacks on the poor. There's SB 1329 that would prohibit Arizona from having a nutrition program that exceeds federal benefits. So, food stamps and we have food assistance through schools, and this would make sure that we do not go above the very minimum that the federal government demands.
Will this save us big bucks, Gary?
No. Frankly, it's with all the cuts we've given to corporations and all the corporate welfare that we hand out, we could pay for most of our assistance to the poor, you know, 100 times over, hundreds of times over. There was a bill that is apparently dead that was put forward that would have prohibited people on state assistance from using their debit cards or their food assistance cards at fast food restaurants.
Why do I think it's dead? Because of the fast food industry rather than because of the compassion.
It's buried in committee, thankfully.
What is the Circle K bill, Gary?
The Circle K bill is HB 2359, and it's passed the House. What it would do is change the number of people required to cause a hearing on a proposed liquor license from 1% to 5% of the population in a one-mile radius.
And
in
other words, people are calling for this legislation desperately, right?
Yes,
Gary?
In other words, it would prevent a convenience store from getting a liquor license in a, you know, semi-residential area.
So who's behind that? You think the people are calling for more liquor stores in their neighborhoods?
I didn't write down who sponsored it, but no, I don't think it's anything that's being called for by the public.
And then I wanted to talk about your section on flex loans. Let's explain what flex loans, since the people of Arizona have numerous times, or at least a couple of times, voted against these outrageous loan operations.
Yeah, this is since the voters in the state did away with payday loans, which could charge, you know, hundreds of percent interest on a loan. And it was a great boon to the companies that were running them. That's why you had, in every community, you had, you know, dozens of payday lenders.
And who paid for all the pro payday loan things, selling this? They had reformed themselves, and they were only going to charge 200 or 300%, you know,
right,
instead of 500 or 600%. Well, so what's the deal with these flex loans?
Well, they're back. It's the same thing as payday loans. They just have renamed them as flex loans, and it will permit lenders to charge fees that can be as high as 233%, I believe.
Who did it. Did you see the calculations, Gary, in the AZ Republic about how you could be locked into almost permanent indebtedness if you borrowed enough of this money, and how
for sure
a small loan would you'd end up paying, you know, $15,000 on a $500 loan if it went out long enough.
If you could ever pay it off at all, it's basically putting people in perpetual debt.
And this great bill
preying on the poor
is called HB 2611,
and it's passed out of the House Commerce Committee and out of the Rules Committee, so it's going before the full House. We have bills on abortion that would make it even more difficult for women to gain access, for poor women to gain access. The thing to remember is back when abortions were illegal, back prior to the 70s, rich people never had problems getting abortions. They were often just called D&Cs. It was just a procedure that was never reported as an abortion, but that's in fact what it was. Now
there were in Oklahoma illegal abortionists, and there were women who were sterilized by going to these places, and there were occasionally someone would actually a woman would actually die. And there was sort of a, when I was growing up in Oklahoma, a secret world of knowing where the abortion doctors were and, you know, and all of that. It was all hidden, but it was all there. I'm not sure legalizing abortion actually increased the number of abortions at all. Might have some, but it was always a terrible, scary, secret, shameful procedure. And it took away from women, whether they're making the right decision or the wrong decision, the right to make their own decisions. And that's kind of an issue on abortion. And so it doesn't, as Gary's saying, it doesn't really affect wealthy women, and it never did. They could always fly to Mexico or the Bahamas or somewhere and stay in a fancy hospital and do the whole thing. But it affects people with much smaller resources, right, Gary?
Yes. It really targets the poor.
You want to talk about good bills? Are there any good bills, Gary? I mean, we're sounding like doom and gloom pessimists here, looking at all the appalling bills going through the legislature.
You get what you vote for, and we've had years of voting, you know, some very questionable people into the House, and they keep bringing up this stuff. So yeah, there are some good bills.
In 3 minutes, we will give you a list of the good bills, which is going to be easier to do than you might think.
HB 2102 would enable access our Medicaid program to develop a service program for children with chronic illness or physical disabilities. That's a good thing. HB 2047 would require the approval of a supervisor before a caseworker could remove a child from the home on the grounds of abuse or neglect. So it's just putting, you know, a little more control into taking kids away from their parents. HB 2081 says that it no longer prohibits clean election candidates from accepting the required $5 donations. They were trying to do away with clean elections.
We've got a couple of minutes. Isn't there another sort of plot to take the clean elections money? And I don't know.
They wanted to take it to give to education.
Right.
Education money.
Yes.
As a carrot to get rid of clean elections. Cause we want all elections to be run by dark money in Arizona. We want the wealthiest people to be elected and no one else. Or those with wealthy backers. There's some other good bills going through on health care and reducing incarceration in Arizona prisons, improving prison conditions and reducing solitary confinement that we've talked about in the past. There was a bill that would prevent the prosecution of 18 to 21-year-old drinkers who've made a mistake. So there's good stuff. Most of the Democratic bills are all buried in committee and never see the light of day.
It's a completely Republican-run show. If you like that show, I guess it's one thing. If you don't, it's pretty appalling. I'd like to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks and Democrats of the Verde Valley for their support for the program.
We have a meeting coming up on Thursday morning.
And
Democrats of the Red Rocks.
A speaker on about the border issues who lives on the border. We're continuing our look into investigating the Bowles murder, and we will have David Frazier and probably somebody else on joining us in a few weeks. Thank you for joining us. VVID.org. That's our website, and we'll hope you'll drop by. All of our podcasts, all of our shows are on there. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.